This episode is brought to you by Bellatoris Publishing, bringing stories to the world that last forever.
Today on Faithfully Fantasy.
Kelly, one of our listeners, has got me on the We Don't Trust Kaori bandwagon. Like, I am now firmly in this on this journey. He is winding Jack up at this point. That is the moment when Jack decided he was going to go Venon. He is pushing Jack.
Like, well, yeah, I see how it goes when you are in love with somebody that's in such a power.
But there are people that think that he was in love with Fenrir's son.
This new room they were talking about is a delayed room. The room that's in the book from Daddy Sorangel. She's still thinking that room is a destructive room. Could be maybe like a masking room. Hello and welcome to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Onyx Storm.
I'm JC.
And I'm Sean.
And today we cover chapters 46 to 48.
This episode will contain spoilers from all three books, as well as snippets of information we've had from Rebecca Yarros since the release of the third book.
And before we start with the squad brief, quick reminder, you can now subscribe for exclusive content. Think early access to episodes, bonus episodes every month, and totally ad-free listening. You can every try for free and cancel anytime. For the best deal, check out faithfullyfantasy.com, or if it's easier, just subscribe right on Spotify or Apple Podcasts for instant access.
Also, if you're enjoying the show, please take a second to rate us wherever you're listening. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all of it. It helps more fantasy lovers find us, and it's one of the easiest ways to support what we do. A quick tap and you've made our day.
And now, without further ado, let's get into a squad brief.
Tirindor is opening her borders. Her Duke might be ready for war with Navarre, but he sure is brooding, and not without good reason. Are we witnessing Shadows selecting a new master? It's an early start for Violet as she helps Sawyer get back on the horse. Our squad fly for Erasure with at least one, maybe two, unwelcome visitors. Violet hears that Brennan can't fix him, despite trying some pretty sus things so far. We find some hope in a book sent by Takaris, and Zayden comes back. He's 3 days under his must-not-channel target, but he's done brooding. He's done waiting. She's at full power. He's in full control. No more waiting.
Okay, I have to admit, the first time when I read these chapters, I wasn't expecting that we will get a new Shadow Daddy.
No,
that was
neither.
Just completely unexpected.
I know, and I don't know what to think. Right, let's get to that, because I have got thoughts, obviously.
Yes, obviously. There's a lot of things that we have to say about it. So, time for a history lesson. Let's dive deep and see what the past is hiding about the future.
Chapter 46.
Epigraph.
When this is over, we should take as much leave as they'll give us and spend it all in Erasure. We can figure out what life is supposed to look like without the daily threat of death. You can govern the province you love during the day, then slide into bed with me at night. Or I can always join you in the assembly chamber. You do some of your best work on that throne. Recovered correspondence of Cadet Violet Sorengale to His Grace Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson, 16th Duke of Tirindor.
Wow.
Yeah, let's just get the throwback. So fourth wing, my house, my chair, my woman.
Yes.
You should have done that bit.
Obviously, she's missing that part of the Duke of Tirindor working in that throne with her.
Yeah. So I got this bit, again, vibes. If there's no magic, there's no threat of death. Mm-hmm. And it kind of paints the picture of what we might have beyond the fifth book. I don't think they're going to die. So.
Well, I don't know if this is going to be one of those stories that maybe we are just living the past. So maybe they're dead, but because they died, I don't know, 200 years ago or something. And it's just part of Yesenia's like massive project that she's the one who is telling the story about them.
Why is she still alive if they died years and years ago? She's really old.
She's not alive. She's given the
Somebody's
work.
Found it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. And then it's not so sad.
Yeah. they have a happy life even when we can't witness it.
Yeah. No, I'm really holding out for a happy ending.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be like, you don't know Rebecca Yarros. But I do think her books are happy endings. They tear our heart out. They're emotional. They're awful. They're brilliant. But it is a happy ending. It's just not the happy ending we were expecting.
Yes. That's the word for a good author. They had to take you for a ride. You think that you know where you're going, and they take you for a complete unexpected.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that you didn't know that you need or you want.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's unhappy.
Yeah, exactly. So as we remember last chapter end with Felix getting to Violet, they need to train. They know now the walls and Arasia, they're falling really quick. Zaydan has things to do. So he has to go back to Thirandor. Something's going on over there. And Violet, she's just training every single time that she has an opportunity. And it's like, finally, she is doing something with this signet. Because I remember the days when we see her after we discover what was her signet. And she will never practice. She will never do anything unless they maybe Card was doing something with her. But she never had this, like, I need to do it because I'm the last hope.
Yeah, she was like Harry Potter, leaving his homework till the last minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
We do still see that, though, with the runes. She's like, nah, well, I'm in a squad. The rest yeah, can
that's
do it
another
for
annoying
me.
Thing.
Yeah.
But I guess it's just part of the plot because if she's supposed to be excellent in everything, probably we don't need 5 books.
Yeah, there's no balance. Magic, keep it in balance. Something she says, so she says, as my aim improves, as my strikes increase, the rest of the world seems to go to shit. And that's like, well, there's some balance for you. Things aren't going well, things aren't looking good outside the walls.
Yes, so we start to see the Venom are getting closer than just taken some cities that are on the way to go to Arasia.
Yeah, the wards are failing.
And the wards are failing, yes. Mm-hmm. And
it feels like deja vu saying that. I mean, we've had failing wards in... Oh, it's just Iron Flame, wasn't it? Did we have failing wards in... Yeah, we had failing wards right from the beginning.
Yes, so even when we knew there was wards there, straight away in the same chapter, we found out there's something wrong with those wards.
Yeah, yeah.
So between all this stuff that Violet's doing, and they go on with, she goes with all the group, and we have basically the Iron Squad together. Card is the one who is doing the classes that represent Zaydan, basically, because Zaydan is not there, neither is Garrick. So Riddock, he goes with a little joke to Imogen. And say, well, we haven't seen Gary for a little while. What have you done with him, Imogen? You have a locked up or something. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's testing here, but normally when he does, it's because there's something he has seen or something that is going on. So I just wonder if something happened already, and this may be one of the hints that even Riddock is just confirming that those two having something.
It does seem quite obvious. Every time they're together, it does seem like there's something going on. But I don't think anything is going on. Mm. I think Imogen's really worried. You can see that her reaction to this.
That she Imogen, wants to kill her.
Yeah, her eyes contemplate murder. I think she's really worried. I think she's stressed about him.
Yeah.
Because he's still in Draethys. They're on their way to Carr's lesson. Do we trust Carr?
I don't know how to take Carr because obviously he didn't do a good job with Violet with the signet training. But when Varys was with Violet, he was against Varys. Mm. So this made me think he's not a bad guy. It's just that he's maybe not a good teacher.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think he's bad. He seems like the obvious bad teacher. I have a lot to say about Professor Kaori this week, but he's the obvious bad one, and that's why I feel like you're right. I don't think he's a bad person.
It's a little bit complicated because yes, I'm saying that maybe he's just not a good teacher, But an Iron Flame, when he was just making these flames, and Body was the one who turned it off. He said, unfortunately for you, you teach it like very well or something like this.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I think Carr is a bit weak.
Yeah, and you can tell even Felix, he had like something against him. Like he doesn't like him. But maybe it's just because he's not taking like all the potential of the students. He's just maybe, I don't know, doing the job and that's it. Nothing else.
So I feel like we know that there's Venom in disguise around Buzgarith. It will be the obvious one, won't it? Mm-hmm. He would be the obvious one, other than Panchak, obviously, that we know about.
So they're talking about a little bit about everything. And one of the things that jumps straight away in the conversation is that Kaori is going to Arasia with Panchak as well. And that is something interesting because Kaori, obviously, he is the expert in dragons. He is desperate to study Andarna. He just wants to spend some time with her. Even Violet hears Sida, and she said, well, I know exactly why he is doing it, and Andarna is not in the mood for that.
Yeah, and so with Kaori, we've been like a little bit questioning of Kaori, but mostly because we thought he was just a ridiculous person. We were like, what the fuck is Kaori doing this week? In Fourth Wing, he does some really weird things. But Kelly, one of our listeners, has got me on the we don't trust Kaori bandwagon. Like, I am now firmly in this on this journey. To run through the evidence,
okay.
He has got a book on all the strengths, all the weaknesses of active dragons. True. He just leaves that lying around. What is in there around weaknesses? He's got a lot of information to sell to the Venom, to the enemy, and I think that would be incredibly valuable. He is in the medic tent after threshing. What the fuck is he doing in there? Like, he shouldn't be in there. He is chatting with Violet. What we didn't remember is that he is winding Jack up at this point. He is saying, I can't remember the quotes, but he is saying, she's bonded to the strongest dragon. Well, who did you bond? What did you bond again? A little orange. winding him up.
The four rider of this dragon.
Yeah. And as Kelly points out, that is the moment when Jack decided he was going to go Venom. He is pushing Jack.
Yeah.
And he's in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on where you look at it. As far as we're aware, there is nobody else in that tent with them at that moment in time. Auric, we talked about this last week. Auric throws his axe at Kaori to cancel out or to get rid of the illusion on the flight field when they're practicing the new maneuvers. He is far too interested in Andarna. And you could say, yes, he's the Dragon Watcher, but he is going to Arasia also to get intel on the other Empyrean. He is effectively like doing spies work now. Best of all, and this is where like Kelly had me convinced, he is an illusionist. What do you think that means that he can do to his appearance?
Oh, yeah, that's true. He can. I mean, we know already that Venom, they can camouflage very well. But if you add to the fact that he can make illusions with anything.
Yeah. So this chapter, like when they go to Arasia, this ties him to Panchak. There's a specific page where it talks about Kaori and Panchak. But if you go back through all of the parts where Kaori shows up, he shows up when Violet's about to be in trouble. He's like jumping in to save the day. He's getting into her good side. It even specifically says Kaori is her favorite professor at this point.
Yes.
Isn't it something that Rebecca Yarros would do? Make the favorite professor the one that betrays us.
Yeah, the one that you're not expecting or you don't see it coming.
Yeah. So I'm all in now on the I can't trust Kaori. It's gone from Kaori's a bit of a joke to
I'm keeping an eye on you.
I'm keeping an eye on that man.
Yeah, I mean, I completely forgot about the book because we were laughing about it. Like, why he's doing that? And then just leaving any other place when anyone can find it. But what about if everything is just calculated?
So much information in there that he can give to the enemy.
Yes. And obviously Tern doesn't trust him. They call him the Dragon Watcher.
Yeah. And if he doesn't deliberately say those things in the tent after threshing to get Jack to channel, he plays a massive part in actually pushing him to do so.
Yes. I completely agree with that.
We don't trust Kaori anymore in this house.
Oh, Kaori. Used to be my favorite too.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites because he's so funny. Like some of the stuff he's done. But that's the problem. I think we're being, like, the wool is being pulled over our eyes. We're supposed to think he's just this, like, bumbling professor that's lovely.
Don't keep an eye on him. He's just the funny one or the strange one.
Yeah, yeah. Something else she pointed out to me was that Zayden, when he first comes back as professor, he's heading to Kaori's office.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he going to Kaori's office? Does Kaori know he's Venon?
Oh, maybe Zayden can read the intentions or something. They're just checking on him.
Maybe, but I have a feeling it's the other way around. I think Kaori's aware there's a new initiate.
Yeah.
And while he's not the sage, he's called him to, like, keep an eye on him. Kaori is always there.
Yes.
And we just don't notice him.
And we had a word from Jack as well, the Ameve. He can be between them and nobody will recognize him.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So they're in the corridor and Auric tilts his head, stops suddenly, and basically you get this like comedy. They're all banging into each other. He throws his arm across Lynx to stop him going through the door and like drags him backwards. Then all of a sudden, as if he could see it coming, the Duke of Caldir smashes through the door having a bit of a tantrum because he's never known a day of suffering in his life and he's having a bit of a paddy. Are we witnessing Auric manifesting for the first time, at least in real time on the page? He might have done it before. Holden will be king and a terrible one. I'll most likely die on the battlefield. He might have done that before. But this feels like he tilts his head. He's confused. He doesn't say he can hear something. He yanks Lynx back. I think this is the first time he's actually doing it on the page.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for me it was strange as well because I didn't know how to take it. Either he just saw it in the moment, like maybe 2 or 3 seconds before it happened, and then he realized it was about to happen. Or maybe he saw it before, and then kind of like a deja vu, like, hey, wait, I've seen this before. What's going on? And then remember the door. And it's when he stops because, you know, there somebody is going to come really strong. So it's happening right there or it's just like a deja vu?
I don't know. We've got so many questions about.
Yeah, but it really feels there's Signet related.
It's definitely Signet related. Yeah. And then because there's another. When she's talking about the runes later, she's saying, even Auric, who hasn't channeled yet, or hasn't manifested yet, there's too many hints that he already has at this point.
Yes.
Zayden also walks through the door. His eyes jump to Violet like a compass pointing north, or like a compass pulled north.
Yeah.
Well, if this isn't a link to the compass that she has, I am now convinced, and whether it is too obvious or not, I am now convinced that this compass is going to help her stay connected or at least find him, even though it's obvious and it's Jack Sparrow's and it's like what she desires. I think it's something to do with finding the person she loves or finding
the heart. Him.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm interested to see what she's going to say about this compass, because if it's going to be exactly what Jack Sparrow has, it's a little bit like, meh. We've seen this already and somewhere else. So I'm convinced it's going to help to find Zayden, but I'm intrigued and what's going to be the way to find it. It's going to be because it's searching for her true love or her gravity or her north.
Yeah. Well, it literally says like a compass pulled north here. And I think that's a like Rebecca Yarros doing what Rebecca Yarros does best and just telling us what's going to happen. And then you don't realize. And then until later, and you're like,
oh, God.
Yeah, that's obvious.
So all of this is happening is because Zaydan is basically telling to the scenario that Tyrandor is going to open the doors to welcome all the people who wants to go there running from the Vanan. All the people from the kingdom, they're against that. They say, no, we can't afford having more people here. You're going to ruin the kingdom if you do that. Say that, don't say, give a shit. They have a fight with Holden. Holden is saying, this is my kingdom. You can't do that. Say then it's just saying, you are just the prince for the one to be the ruler, but you are not the ruler. I am the one from Tyrandor, and I'm just telling you, this is what I'm doing and this is what's happening.
It's like an FYI email.
Yeah.
You don't need a response. I'm just telling you now so that you can't say I didn't tell you. there's nearly a fight. There's nearly an... So he says, will you be saying that when my troops arrive at your border? So this is serious stuff. This is like a... This is a...
Proper threat. Yeah.
I want to talk about his eyes here. So Violet notices that the amber in his eyes is brighter but not lighter. Why are there no rings around his eyes? Why does it only affect the flecks and not... Why is it not rings? He had rings at the end of Iron Flame. He had a very faint red rim around his eye. And rather than the full thing going red... or a ring around his eye, that doesn't seem to be there anymore, does it?
No, it's strange. For me, the strange part as well, how can she notice these things from the distance? Like,
oh, he's right there.
Yeah, but still, you need to like get really close to notice like little flakes in the eyes. Unless they may be like really big and they can see it like from...
I don't notice people's eyes anyway. You could be like asking me what colour... is this person's eyes, and I've like spent all day every day with them for weeks and weeks, and I've not noticed what color their eyes are. You always notice people's eyes, don't you?
Yes, but that's what I mean. I can notice maybe just the color, like something subtle, but we're talking about flair, like going deeper.
I wouldn't even notice the color of their eyes. I often won't even notice the color of somebody's hair. Just be talking to them, having a great conversation. Yes. I'm like more wrapped up in what they're saying than what color their eyes are.
Just obviously is something strange, but we don't know if it's just because he is kind of like in the transition, but because he's not channeling anymore, that's messing stuff with the eyes or with the body or something. And I don't know, like a reference, but I thought for the very first time when I read that he was like channeling or he was about or something was going on. But in the end...
Well, I feel like it might be symbolic of the conflict that's in him. And we are pretty convinced, aren't we, that he is somehow linked to Loial.
Yes.
Whether he's been dedicated and like, I mean... The epigraph, we're not going to cover it this week, but that epigraph that comes right in the middle of the sex scene feels a bit obvious. So is it that there's like this conflict in his eyes, and his eyes, because they are representing his bond or connection to Loial, that's what's fighting? And while it's not red, because these golden flecks are fighting back and they're pushing the rim, and there's no rings anymore because the golden flecks, and that is like symbolic of the fact that love is what is keeping his soul intact.
Yeah.
So Tyrandor, like you said, will open her borders. Peromish citizens will be willing. He's saying we'll take anyone who was willing to climb the Madaro Pass, which is terrifying. And this really, again, comes back to the fact that Rebecca Yarros understands war. She understands conflict. She is writing a book that is as real as any conflict currently ongoing in the world. She's just writing it about dragons. It's kind of just represents the journey, like the terrifying journey that a lot of refugees find themselves on. And it is a choice between death at home, death on the journey. But actually, death on the journey, there's a little bit of hope at the other side. The rest, there is nothing. And you just imagine how terrified you must be to pick up your entire family and risk, like, don't know, 12,000 foot, right?
Yes.
Cliffs. Yeah. And it just, this again is just kind of what we came, what we covered when the Irids were speaking, and Andana says, you preach peace, but you've only ever known its privilege. And just these bits like hit me in the stomach because they are so real. And it doesn't matter if you are fighting a war between magic stealing, red eyed venom monsters and dragon riders, but it's real that this is happening now around the world.
Yes. And obviously it's the idea that if I just stay at home, it's going to be 100% and certainly that you will die. But if I just trying to risk it and go trying to find a better place, like in this case, just trying to climb the cliffs, you have maybe 50% chance, but 50% chance is still better than 100% certainty or dead.
Yeah, but the worst thing is there will be civilians that die, and we witnessed that. If Navarre would let them in the other way, they wouldn't have to climb the cliffs and they wouldn't have to go through the valley at the end of the book in the last big battle scene where it's incredibly dangerous.
Yes.
The Duke of Tirindor, Zayden, at this moment in time, is making the decision between supplying Navarre with food and minerals and the stuff that's being mined, because they're effectively trading, and he's stopping trading and feeding refugees. So Holden is not having any of it, and he says, will you be quite so sure of yourself when I bring my troops to Tirindor? Auric is, this is where we see how firmly in the Aracian camp he is. He's on the side of Aracia, and he knows about the provincial commitment, which means a third of the Navarian army now reports to Zayden. This, I feel like nobody's talking about, and I said this last week. Auric says, I'm under Zayden's command, so you can't, like, you don't have shit on me, basically. And the fact that this is where we're seeing it break up. In the next book, I'm calling it now, the provinces will splinter. Like, there will be some conflict, I think, between Navarre and Tirindor at the least, or Caldir and Tirindor. And Caldir is a teeny tiny province. It won't have troops. Holden's saying, when I bring my troops, how many does he actually have? Even though they've doubled conscripts, Caldir is tiny.
Plus Tirindor is still the one with more soldiers, more everything as well.
Yeah, I think King Tower, it'll all be over for King Tower in book 4. Yeah. I'm calling his death in book 4. Death by Dark Wielder.
Yeah. But I think it's in this chapter we start to see there's a better relationship between Auric and Zayden. It's like Auric is getting Zayden's back. And Zayden, obviously, he has a really good impression with Auric, because when Holden was threatened, he was telling him, well, in that case, I'm afraid that Auric will be the next one to be in the crown.
Yeah.
Because it's telling him that you won't be the guy who's going to threaten me and live to tell about it. But Zayden somehow is always thinking about maybe Auric is going to be king. He's going to be the one who is going to...
I don't see it happening. I just can't see it happening.
So here's a really interesting part in this chapter, because Holden is pushing like all the buttons from Zayden. Zayden is just looking at him like he would just want to kill him. It's the impression that we get from Violet, that he has that look and looking at Holden while Holden is leaving. Violet is trying to like bring him back, like, come to me. And Zayden, he has to blink twice, like really hard, because he's trying to maybe take control whatever is happening inside. I think inside is just maybe the van inside taking over, because it happened a couple of times that he's like losing control and he's just maybe thinking about killing or just, you know, say that out of control. Mm-hmm. But it's right here after he's blinking and like, okay, I've retaken the control, when Lynx starts manifesting the shadows.
Not even that, his shadows flee. Yeah. Zayden's shadows flee from him, and then Lynx manifests.
So here is when the magic starts to see the is the breaking point from Zayden. Then when maybe it's the Venom side taking over and there's no return, is when it gives the shadows for the next one.
Lynx is becoming the new shadow wielder. So I have ransacked my brain for any reason why this can be a good thing for Zayden.
Yes.
It's really hard. I'm struggling. So could he be the mirror and not the balance? Like, does there have to be a balance? Imogen says that can't be true. And Violet says, but you're our generation's shadow wielder. Does there have to just be one? I mean, there's loads of ice wielders. There's loads of fire wielders. Yes, we know that there's only ever been one per generation. Perhaps two are needed because they're fighting dark wielders. These people are really powerful. Maybe magic knows they need two. Sorry, I know I'm delulu here. Is Zayden possibly, the shadows are fleeing from him. He was dark and broody and he was the shadow daddy. He's now totally in love. Is he becoming light?
Interesting point of view.
I'm sorry. I'm just clutching at straws. I just really, really, really want him to be okay. Yeah, despite what Imogen says and what Violet says, there could be a need for more than one.
Yeah. The thing that I'm thinking right now is about Lynx, because I can't remember which color is his dragon, but if I would start to think about what the Iris said before, there's the dragon who gives the signet to the rider. So I wonder if maybe in that moment when Zayden is just struggling and then maybe for Lynx dragon, suddenly the shadow appeared as an option. I'm like, oh, shadow, I never had this one before.
I don't think that's how it works, because when Violet realizes that she's a dreamwalker, Andana says, I didn't have control over it, just like you didn't have control of the lightning wielder thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we get the Irid saying that, unless Andana's saying, if you're going to blame me, you have to admit that we choose these things. So maybe it could still be that. I don't necessarily think, it's just, again, I've like talked a lot about Rebecca Yarros and what she's doing to us this episode already, but it is just like her to make you believe something. It's all over for Zayden. There's another shadow wielder. And then later we find out there was a good reason for it and it was fine. Just kind of like Mira. You think she's dead. She's not dead. Like several things like that. Riddick got stabbed in the side. Mm-hmm. Oh no, he didn't. And she makes you think that you're in danger. She makes you think it's all bad. And then she finds some way of pulling you back. And I just want this to be one of those times. So that's why I'm looking for reasons why it could be.
Yeah.
What we can see here is Zayden giving Lynx some really solid advice. He's been there. He's been at the point where he was probably terrified. The shadows looked like they were going to control him. He couldn't immediately get control. This makes me feel sad for Zayden the first time he manifested. And then later he manifested the intrinsic and he like tried to hold his shit together and go and see Sigel. But what he said, he says, close your eyes and think of the place you feel safest. And he's like talking to Lynx. He's like grabbing him by the arms and saying, you've got this. You can do this. You're manifesting. Don't be scared. Mm-hmm. Those are not the words or the actions of a soulless Venon.
Yeah. He's helping the one who's going to replace him.
He's not going to replace him.
Well, and that moment is how it feels, because he says magic knows.
Yeah, but I think magic knows that there's two different routes that he can take. And this is like, you might need to. Either you need to, because either the Venin are growing stronger or Zayden's going to go like deep, deep down. I do think he's going to go deep, deep down before he comes back. But I don't think he'll ever stop loving Violet, because we get proof that Venin don't have to stop loving. Or some of them, at least three, haven't. Yeah. I think this is Rebecca Yarros's way of saying that's not why this is happening. Because yes, he walks off at the end of this, and this actually affects him quite badly, I think. He doesn't say that it does. But before this point, he's helping Lynx. He's saying, and that a soulless Venant, Jack Barlow would not do that.
Yeah. Somebody that maybe is scared because he knows that, okay, this happened is because it's all over for me.
Yeah, and you're my enemy now.
Yeah.
Because like Theophany and Lilith.
Yes, that you are just in the other side now, yeah, the dark side.
That's not how he's treating Lynx. He's helping him.
Yeah.
I'm clinging on to it. I don't care what anybody says. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Right, so like you say, this is something that is really hard for Zayden. He leaves. Violet is just there, and she is just completely heartbroken as well. Llewellyn, he sees the whole thing. And then he's just trying to talk to her, and he feels a lot of respect on her, and he feels all the love and everything that's going on between them. But at the same time, he is trying to convince her that the best thing that she can just do is just give him space, because right now for him, Tirendor is the priority. He can't think about anything else. And she is just pushing back, like, no, but he needs to think about himself. He needs to have somebody there for him. And then he says something really strange. That's like, well, yeah, I see how it goes when you are in love with somebody that's in such a power.
Mm.
That like a really strange thing to say.
Yeah, I have seen a theory, and I can't remember where I saw it now. So I'm really sorry. I can't give credit. But there are people that think that he was in love with Fenrirsen.
Mm.
And that is why he ended up being the one that looked after, the one that Fen would trust to raise his only son.
Yes.
And that would trust to keep Erasure on the right path.
Yes.
I really like it. I really like this theory. I don't see a flaw.
Yeah, I can't say no to that, because so far what we know from Fen, he didn't have that much love or respect for the wife.
He didn't love Talia.
Yes.
He said, save your love for your children. There was some reason why he felt like he couldn't be in love. And also, you've got Llewellyn, who's saying it works both ways. So was Llewellyn too busy, too powerful to make time for Fen? Was Fen too busy, powerful to make time for Llewellyn?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a real strong... I really like this theory. I can't see it being wrong.
Yeah, because I was thinking that, I don't know if he was referring to... he witnessed it. Like, he just watching two couple having these issues. Or he was the one involved as well. Like, talking from his own experience. But obviously, he's saying somebody that has power. So we have to talk about, like, yes, Fenrirsen level or the king. But again, I don't know if he's talking from his own experience, because he was one of those.
I think it sounds like he is. It sounds like he's talking from his own experience.
Yeah.
Just before Zayden leaves, though, Violet is trying everything to keep him there. And this comes back to what she's trying to say to Llewellyn. She's trying to say, not at his own expense. He's got to be looking after himself. Obviously, Llewellyn doesn't know he's Venin either at this point. And Violet, the one thing that Violet shouts, I think, is foreshadowing for what happens at the end of the book and what's going to happen in book four. She shouts, what happens to Ten and Sir Gael if you leave or if you give in? And I think we see that happening at the end of the book. I think that their bond is broken, and that is why Ten needs to recover, and he's not there with Violet. I think he's heartbroken. I think he's torn apart inside, because Sir Gael has, or Andana has, broken the bond between him and Sir Gael.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not the first person to say this, but I can't find an alternative for why. Why would she shout that at him? Why would Rebecca plant that seed for us to think, hang on, what would happen to them?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some major thing that's hit 10 at the end of the book.
Yeah, we're still convinced there's Andana, the one who breaks the bond. But so far we don't know what's happening to the dragon once the rider decide to turn into a full Vernon, like happened in the end with Zaydan. Is the dragon, if I still bond to the Vernon, is going to get corrupted somehow as well?
I think it depends on the bond, doesn't it? Because Jack is quite clearly able to control his dragon.
Mm-hmm.
While we don't get confirmation that Varys is Vernon, I'm in the camp that believes he was. Solas was definitely, well, Varys was making us believe that he was being controlled because
mm-hmm.
he was saying, kiss Kaori again, saying to Varys.
And you're saying that you are the one who made your dragon to kill all those cadets.
Wait, was it Emetaria?
No, I think it was Kaori.
Okay, well, one of them was saying, unless you admit.
Mm.
Yeah, because Kaori says he went to Panchek already and agreed that she wasn't going to get punished.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Kaori. So Kaori was saying, unless you're about to admit that some of us can control our dragons,
mm-hmm.
that again just puts Kaori in the, like, the spot. He knows.
Mm.
And he's saying, are you going to really admit that you're a Venon right now? Because trying to keep Violet safe for now.
But yeah, in the Violet says to Tern, tell me if he lives. And 2 hours later, he lives. And that's the end of this chapter.
Yes.
Memoirs of Luz Bell. She loved him. She lost him. And he came back. But wasn't completely him. She feared him. She fought him. But she fell for him. Memoirs of Luz Bell. Now available on Amazon.
Chapter 47.
Epigraph.
A dragon determines its last flight and its riders. Article 1, Section 2, The Dragon Riders Codex. I immediately freaked out when I read this the first time because obviously I didn't know what was going to happen and I was like, someone's going to die. Nobody died. I also thought, like, when I was reading it this time, because I knew what was going to happen, I thought it's obviously about retirement. A dragon decides to retire.
Mm-hmm.
We do hear about retired riders in Erasia coming back, and it's saying that they don't fly anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's because the dragon has decided, according to this article from
they're too old for that shit.
Yeah, they decide when the last flight is going to be. Mm-hmm. But I got a little bit, you know, like how obsessed I am with reading a line over and over and thinking, could it mean something else?
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a bit of an odd thing to say. And actually, are some dragons deciding when their riders die?
Yeah, it's obviously something strange that we haven't seen yet when we see the dragon and the rider spend decades together, and maybe one of them is the one who's getting old or is getting poorly or something.
Like Nolan. I can't imagine Nolan is flying these days.
No, I don't see any of that. And we don't know how old is the dragon either. Are they same age, older?
Well, Nolan is like 80.
Yeah.
So he's got the dragon, he bonded when he was like 21, right?
Yes. So the dragon has to be at least
if he was the same age as Aetrum, yeah.
Yeah, a dragon, I think, it can bond since maybe 4 years old or something like that.
I don't think we actually know, but they're not allowed to bond when they're 2. And they are allowed to bond when they're like 20 because Aetrum is quite young, isn't he? So it's somewhere between that. But yeah, the dragon might decide they don't want their, they don't think their rider should be flying because they're going to put them in danger.
Yeah.
But no. Nolan's dragon might still be fighting. He might just have decided the rider's retired.
Yeah.
And then they stay alive until they die.
Yeah.
So in this particular chapter, it's about retirement, and Sleeg is not having any of it. Sleeg is wanting to help Sawyer back, and Sawyer is not done yet. So,
and that's how we start the chapter. We start as with Violet and Sawyer. They are in the fly field, and Sawyer is just asking for some help with Violet, because she said before that if he needs any help. So she's there to help whatever she can. And yeah, he's just trying really hard to go back to his dragon and failing constantly.
Oh, it's so hard to read this bit, isn't it?
Yes, because obviously he really wants to do it. And the first attempt straight away, facing in the mud. And he keeps trying. And there's a couple of times when he's just in the leg and he's falling. And he's just stressed as well. He's just like, fuck, it's not working or I can't do it. He keeps trying, and he's trying in a part of the leg when the scales has a different pattern. And I was thinking, ooh, this is like really convenient that he had this pattern that he needed. But Sleeg, he said like something. It's like he's not happy that he's telling that to Violet. And that's the part I found a little bit strange. Doesn't mean something.
Yeah, it's because it's a weakness. I bet that's in Kaori's book. I wonder if it will come back. Whether, you know, they talk about you've got to check between the scales because things can get stuck in them and then they can get infected.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weakness. And Sleeg doesn't want anyone to know he's got a weakness.
Yeah. So far, I don't know what else could go in. Obviously, water. Or, I don't know, snow or something that goes inside, because the pattern is basically for liquids or something gets stuck there.
And it's armor, isn't it? It's protecting. So if something gets shot at, like a cross bolt or a arrow, that could get stuck in between the scales.
Yeah.
I guess it's just like flesh underneath, like skin. Yeah. I don't know. But the scales are on top, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And if the scales don't overlap, there's a gap between them.
Yeah.
Sleeg gets, like, there's obviously a fight between them, and there's a lot of stuff coming to the surface. It's quite convenient that Sawyer is saying all this stuff out loud rather than privately down the pond. I tend to think that's just because we need to know what's going on. It would be a bit rubbish if there was a silent communication, but I think Sawyer is winding Sleeg up even more because he's saying some of this stuff out loud. But he's saying things like, you took a risk on me, I won't let you, I'm not going to dishonor you by making you lower your leg or like flatten out. And Sleeg is saying, obviously we don't get Sleeg's part of it, but we can tell what he's saying. He's saying, you lost your leg for me, the least I can do is lower my body so you can get back on the seat. Sleeg is not feeling like Sawyer is unworthy. Sawyer already feels like he's not good enough because he's saying you risked bonding with a repeat. Andana offers to help. Even Andana doesn't think he's unworthy because we know that dragons think that weakness is bad and they just roast the weak people. Where are all these dragons? Who are these dragons? Ten doesn't think Violet is weak. He will lower his leg for her. Andana doesn't think Sawyer is weak. Sleeg doesn't think Sawyer is weak. Where are all the dragons that think there's a weakness? Are they the bad ones? Or like, are
the old ones. And or there's a new generation.
Or are they killing these people for another reason?
Mm-hmm.
They're killing these potential riders for another reason.
The weak links.
Not the weak links, the ones that are possibly more likely to turn venom.
Yeah, because obviously Fourth Wing, like in presentation day, we saw the Son of the Dragon just killed once they thought they were just not worthy or maybe a danger. So
yeah. I don't think they're necessarily killing them because they would need help with the riding. I think they're killing them for another reason.
We always think the Basgaya was built by humans for humans, for riders, and is made in a way that if you are not stronger enough, you won't survive to turn into a venom. But actually, we don't know if maybe that was a requirement from the dragons. They had to say, like, you had to make sure that your riders are not going to survive if they're not stronger enough, because we don't want more venom. But yeah, like you say, Slick, he really wants to help, but Sawyer, the one who is actually refusing. And now Violet, she feels bad as well, because then she's talking with Tern. It's like, oh my God, that's how you feel every single time when you had to lower your shoulder for me. And he said, well, I'm the biggest one, so I'm no concern that somebody's going to laugh for me.
Yeah, it would take a lot more to dishonor me.
Yes. But then she was like, well, but you're doing that just for me, because I'm pretty sure you didn't do that for Nowlin. And then it's what Tern said, we don't talk about the previous one.
I don't think
one.
He says it like that. I think he says it a bit more angry.
No, but in the way that Violet put it, that he feels a little bit like...
It's like agonizing
pain. Yes. And even Andarna is just like giving maybe a look. And Violet like, yes, I know that. Shit, I shouldn't say that. But that way... There is poor, there is agonizing for Tern, talking about Nowlin again. It's just for me, it's like proof that Nowlin is still around and is a venom.
Proof?
Yeah.
So I would say, I 100% agree with you, by the way. So I'm just going to say this because everyone else will. The biggest reason why there would be agonizing pain for anyone would be death. So I don't think this is proof at all that Nowlin is venom. Although I do agree with you that Nowlin is venom, because for Tern is very proud. I don't think he would get this agonizing pain over death.
Yes, but that is exactly the point in this chapter, in these lines. He's saying it will take more than that to dishonor me. So for him, honor is like one of the biggest sins. But when we put the subject on Nowlin here, then what could be more dishonorable for a dragon as Tern? They choose the source of the ground instead of himself, of the dragon?
Yeah, because the rider doesn't think the dragon is strong enough. It needs to take more power from the ground than the dragon can give. That is dishonor. I agree with you, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the way that it's put as agonizing pain could be the result of a death. Yeah. I just don't think
like,
it is. Because,
kind of like a grief there, still there.
Yeah, I don't think Tern will be that upset by the death, more upset by the choice that his rider made. I agree with you. I also think if he died, Tern would be more willing to talk about it. Because it's just a death. It's a death in service, isn't it? Why on earth would he not be talking about it? Riders die all the time.
Yes.
Is it because he's embarrassed and he thinks he should have chosen better? Especially a rider that died to save somebody else. But that's the type of person Violet is as well. Violet would die to save someone else. He has a type.
Mm-hmm.
Tern definitely has a type. He does give an awful lot of shit to Zayden, though, for turning. So you'd think... and
resentment.
Yeah.
Is the dark one.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You'd think he would be a bit more like...
No, but actually, I think precisely because of that, he feels more resentment against the people who choose to turn into a venom. So he like feel like it's still an open wound.
Yeah, because now Zayden's effectively said, told him his mate is not strong enough either.
Yeah, she was wrong.
Yeah, I do agree with you, by the way. I think like more likely than not, Nowlin turned venom.
Yeah.
Which means... I think it's more likely that he's venom than he's Malak. Which is sad.
Yeah. For me, the only thing that makes sense for Nowlin bringing back Brennan from the dead is that he turned into a venom, and Brennan is just a kind of wyvern. So it's not even proper life.
That was my like OG crackpot theory.
Yes.
I don't believe it now.
I mean, the rune in the hand, that's called the resurrected before.
I think the rune's keeping him alive. I just don't think that he's a wyvern.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be able to mend, or like what's going on with Marb and what, like all of that would have to be an illusion.
Yeah.
Recreated.
They go to Arasia, and once they arrive there, Kaori is the first one to just get too close to Andarna, and Andarna is not taking that shit at all.
Yeah, the most interesting part of this exchange is that we find out there is a second Empyrean. We've been asking this question for ages, and this just like jumps out now. Kaori's like trying to get close to Andarna. She's not going to let him. And he's like, ah, also, I came anyway to see this new Empyrean and see how they work. Who is in this Empyrean? What? Why is Tern not in this Empyrean? It can't be the second most and most powerful or oldest dragon, right? If it's not Tern, unless he is in the Empyrean and he's just not telling.
Do we know more black dragons around? Because of Ares always has been coded in Tern.
Well, two new ones were born, weren't they?
Yes, but from the oldest, Coda is the first one. Tern is the second one.
I don't know if Tern... Do we know that Tern is the second oldest? We know he's the second most powerful. But I'm not sure if we know that he's the second oldest.
Yeah. Yeah, good call. I mean, we don't know anything yet about Black Dragons. So normally the Empyrean is always formed by the oldest.
Eldest, yeah.
Yes. So unless then maybe there's another Black Dragon older than Tern.
Yeah, there could be. But I don't think we know much about it. All we know is the six most powerful dragons, because they're the ones that raised the wards. So yeah, you and me both, Kaori, I want to know how that's, that works as well. It says, I suspect that's why Pancheck is here as well. That's clearly not why Pancheck is here. Pancheck is here for intel. I am really surprised that Zayden accepted that. I don't know whether he had much choice or whether it was Atos, Dane's dad, that got to choose. But it puts Kaori and Pancheck together. He links himself to Pancheck here.
Yeah.
And it basically, they're on an information finding mission, not just coming to support, like be teaching assistants, because there's lots of cadets around.
Yeah, definitely. So here in Arasia, everyone is going to the ruins. Violet is a little bit like lost, because like she doesn't know where to go. And Buddy is like, oh, come on, you know where to go. Go to Satan's room, because it's going to be even worse if he found out that you're not staying in that room. And then she went, well, yeah, I'm going there. And then she's having a moment. Then nothing has changed. Everything is still the same, except for the glass box from Selnia. They're still there. But now, inside is the Hilton dagger from Arasia that is there. And one of the emerald stones is missing. And we are assuming that that's the one that he used for giving the ring. Is he was thinking about wedding at this point?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think he's gone to do it now. I did hear some people were saying that he did it when they were in Devor Alley, but I don't get that. I don't think there's any clue that that is the case. I think he's done it in this time period where he thinks he's making a plan. Making a plan because he knows that Lynx has manifested shadows, like he thinks that this is the way things are going. He needs a plan. And marrying Violet is part of that. He's been talking about wedding for ages. Like since he became Duke, he was like, she would be a Duchess, blah blah blah. We've had hints.
Yeah.
But I think the ring is being made now.
Yes, because we're going to have a moment when Brennan arrives, and then yes, he's been busy.
Yeah, I just wanna work out, like, though. Sorry, I want to talk about what this box does for a second. This box has the dagger in. It's a glass box. It's a pewter glass box. We know that the box is safe in his room because nobody can get in anyway. Mm-hmm. But that box obviously is not a box of nothingness now. It is a box with something in it that can be seen from the outside. What would happen if Violet tried to take it? Is that blade protected? What is the box doing? Is it, it's not just an ornamental box, is it?
The very first time when I read Onyx Storm and I saw this box, I thought whatever you put in that box, because it's glass, you put it inside, but from outside it looks like it's empty. So it's maybe like one of the safest places to put something.
But Violet can see.
But yeah, Violet can see that.
Unless it's for the person, unless he's leaving it there for her. Mm-hmm. And he wants her to take it to use it.
Yeah. So maybe it could be that if you allow somebody to see it, then you can see it. Otherwise, if you're not allowed, like the person who pulled that, is not thinking about somebody else, then somebody else won't see nothing inside.
Mm.
That'll be like really cool, safe.
Yeah, it would
because it's like right there in front of you, and you have no need to check what is inside because you see through. There's nothing there.
Mm.
But
I wonder if the wedding ring is in there as well.
Hmm.
But she can't see that. Anyway. Yeah, we also get a mention of the blanket, of Zayden's mom's blanket. It wouldn't come up again if it wasn't important. It was mentioned in Iron Flame. It's mentioned in Onyx Storm. It will surely come back. I think it's protective. I think there is some kind of magic of love in there from his mom, from Loisom, because I'm convinced that they're all connected to Loial. And I am strongly convinced that this blanket has some kind of power within it.
Okay, so this is the interesting part about this chapter. Violet is having a little moment in Zayden's room when somebody knocks at the door, and it's Brennan. So she has to put Brennan inside because Zayden have been messing around with the walls, and now this is how it has to be done. The first thing that Brennan says to Violet is, "I can't mend him." And Violet's like, "What? What are you talking about?" And then she's like, "Oh, you know, yes, I know. We've been trying a lot of stuff. We're trying to put the power back to the ground. That was one of our solutions.
How? They do not have a siphon."
Yes, that's something really interesting, because he said that we try everything, but I don't know if he's talking about maybe other methods that he knew, like the siphon, but he didn't use with Zayden specifically, but maybe he mentioned it like, no, that doesn't work because I tried before. Or if they were trying somehow, but siphons, and they're rare as well, how they try it, and obviously it didn't work. That was one of the theories that a lot of people have, like, oh, Sloane is going to be the cure.
My theory. Like, I was dying on the hill.
Yes.
But I don't think they did it right. They didn't. We know Brennan can't siphon, because I was thinking, hang on, Naylan, is he still linked to Naylan? Does he have Naylan's power? Did they try to siphon it in? Mm-hmm. But we know that Brennan can't do that because he doesn't do it for Mira. He needs Sloane to take the power from Dane.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't siphon. So how did he do it? I don't think he tried to do it properly. And there it could be. He's saying, I don't know if this is Rebecca Yarrow saying, no, you're all wrong, this isn't going to work, because she's like wanting to quash any thought that Sloane is, it's as simple as Sloane putting the magic back. But he didn't do it right, because they didn't have a siphon, unless they did have a siphon and we just don't know about it. Somebody else knows.
Yes. So whatever, if they use a siphon or other way, trying to put the magic back to the ground.
Didn't work.
The other solution that I don't know who came with this one is sitting in the dragon eggs. First, who came with this idea? And second, how
did they get close?
Yes. I thought that no human is allowed in the Vale or in dragon territory. And more when they had dragon's eggs.
Yeah. So. Which dragons let them close to their eggs?
And sit on the eggs.
Not sitting on them, sitting with them. Well. Like sitting next to them, like having a chat. Like, I mean, security risk.
Yes. Unless they were talking about Sagel's eggs.
Where would why would they be there? Why would they be there? When would they have been put there? And then they would spend all their time at Basgaiath. I don't see. And I know that Rebecca Yarros might be lying to us, but she did say that Sagel and Tern do not have eggs. They would not have babies. But I don't know where they're getting hold of their dragon contraception. Because we know that they're definitely at it.
Yes.
But whether there's like a mini pill for dragons.
And the pull-out method doesn't work always.
Yeah, maybe not. So big security risk there. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that they are not. But also, we know dragon eggs go missing at the end of this book. Mm-hmm. And we also know that Zayden and Brennan are so far the only people we know who have had access to these eggs.
Yes.
Is that a clue that was one of them had something to do with these dragon's eggs going missing? I tend to think it was Auric because he saw they were needed. But, and if they let Brennan and Zayden in, then they let anybody willy-nilly just march on up to these eggs. No wonder they got stolen.
Mm. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Brennan because he was NDM with Violet. But Zayden...
Well, he's a strategist. He could have had everything to do with it. Whether physically he took them where they needed to go. Mm-hmm. Brennan could have had everything to do with it. It doesn't just because Brennan's around at the end, it doesn't mean it wasn't his idea.
No, I think maybe Zayden just go there with the veins and the eye, like, oh, it is getting worse, so I'm going to see it with the eggs around the eggs if that's fine for a little bit. Then took six.
No, so this other Empyrean are obviously a little bit lax with their security.
Maybe they're taking the same approach as the Ryerson house, when doors are always open for anyone. There's no secrets.
Well, we look where that got them. At so the end, of the
world. People, the dragon from the Vale, they are the ones who know what they're doing.
Well, with the eggs, yeah. Another part of this conversation that I found really interesting was that Brennan says he must be further ahead than when Nolan started working with Jack. Mm-hmm. What was Nolan actually doing with Jack? He couldn't cure him. But was he? Yeah, he said he was mending the soul. Mm-hmm. Was it? It wasn't successful. So how could Nolan think that he could mend the soul when Brennan couldn't? Because Zayden's channeled, what, three times? Mm-hmm. Three times?
Yes.
Surely Jack channeled more than that because he was like, oh.
I mean, to survive the fallen from Farwind, yeah, he has to be pretty much like full Brennan.
He definitely channeled on the map, didn't he?
Yes. Well, he wasn't channeling. He was passing power to Violet.
No, but it said that
he was already a Brennan when that happened. Yes. Yeah.
So he channeled, then he channeled. So he channeled three times as well. What was Nolan like? This something doesn't add up here.
Yes.
Did they just not have an air wheel? Well, they would have had Garrick. Garrick's
yeah,
an
but
air wheel,
the air wheel there is just to prevent the channel from the ground.
And Zayden's not
Zayden
doing it.
Zayden
anyway.
Is not doing it. Yes.
Yeah, so. It didn't. Something doesn't add up there. And I wonder, you know, this idea they have at the end where Zayden's written a letter to Brennan and he's like, I want to try mending the spot at Basgaiath where it happened. Do you think they ever tried that? Would it work?
Mm.
No. I mean, if sitting with dragon eggs and siphoning the power back into the earth, unless they siphon the power back into the earth at that specific point where it was stolen, maybe. I still don't think, I was sure this was going to be the cure, but... Mm-hmm. I'm now more and more convinced that love is the answer. Like, it has to be.
Yeah, yeah, this is a romance book.
Yeah. Chapter 48, shall we move on?
Yeah, epigraph.
I love this one. 472 AU, Wilhaven, Breivik. With the exception of one house, the village was desiccated overnight by a single Venon estimated to be a sage. The only adult among the three survivors described her as astonishingly ageless, hair as black as the day we married, but in place of the age lines I'd expected were bulging scarlet veins branching outwards from her red-ringed eyes. The Resurgence of Evil, a Timeline by Pearson Halliwell. Right, let's break this down. So, one house survived. The whole place was absolutely ransacked. And then you're like, why was that house left alone? Well, three survivors and one adult survivor. And he talks about this woman as hair as black as the day we married. So we know that they are the husband and wife. At one point, he was her husband. So I think because he's the only adult, we can then assume that the children, that the other two were his children, their children. So by that, we can divine that the Venon did not kill her husband and children.
Yes.
She was fully like Venon at this point. She was a sage. Like, she'd moved up the ranks. So she was still able to feel something for them and keep them alive. That's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is that he expected her to be older. He expected her hair to be grayer. He expected age lines, which means she had gone away to become this sage and she has come back and she still does not want to kill them. So she could have been doing it for a different purpose, or she could have been effectively doing it to save them. It is the only surefire way, apparently, of not being killed, is if you've got your other half is a Venon or you've got something they want. But yeah, the fact that she came back and he expected her to be a lot older, this is like years and years since, but then you'd think the children would be older. So there's some things that don't make sense. But we later find out in this chapter that this is the third example that Violet has found of a Venon still being able to love. I love this epigraph. It gives me hope. Especially after the Lynx situation.
For me, this epigraph gave me 2 points to detail. So the man said that she looks black hair just when they met the first time and ageless, which we said the Venon, when they turn like a proper sage, they're like look young, because it's been a couple of times when mentioned a full Venon, but they look young, maybe in their 20s. Well, I'm thinking when I'm talking about this, King of the Varelli, it looks younger than it should be. So yeah, that's one link there. Next, as we're talking about this attack, all the houses were destroyed except one. So the one from the Venon family. This reminds me of Tecaros.
Yeah.
Because his kingdom, his area where he lives, is the only one that the Venons never attack.
Yeah.
So,
because he's Venon.
Yes. So,
or at least somebody close to him is Venon and is leaving him alone.
Yes. So for me, this is just more confirmation about that Venon link that Carlos has there.
And it's his book.
Yes.
Okay, so the first word of this chapter is thunder. Lucky for Violet and Zayden, in this chapter, there is a thunderstorm. So suspicious people might not notice that they're getting it on, because there's already a thunderstorm.
Yes.
The wards are failing. My money is that Theophany is close by.
It's a really strange lines, because Violet described there's a thunder and she said they're like inviting me to a play. So maybe it's just Theophany.
Precisely, it definitely is Theophany. That. Just waiting for the wards to fail.
Yes.
One thing she says here is it says, she's thinking back to Brennan and Zayden. He's not given up. Brennan hasn't been able to fix it yet, but there has never been a problem that my brother can't solve. I do think Brennan will play a key role in figuring this out, perhaps because of the link with Nailin, perhaps something, but it feels like that there on the page is a clue that Brennan is going to figure this out.
Violet is having some thoughts here. And one of them is that she's thinking that maybe she should do something more proactive with the time that she has, that maybe she should study about this new room they were talking about, this delay room. There's a room to trigger a room that has lost magic or it's not working anymore. But she is not taking this seriously again, which for me is another hint that the room that's in the book from Daddy Sorangel is something that she actually will be able to activate or reactivate with this room that she doesn't want to learn yet. But I think it's because she's still thinking that that room is a destructive room, because that's what Rhiannon says. But once she starts to learn more about rooms, she will realize that maybe that room there could be maybe like a masking room. And then when she used this new rune to trigger this one is when we're going to see the research about feather tails and the other stuff that we were expecting from Dali Sorangel that we didn't get in this research.
I love this. I had a similar thought, but I didn't think of the rune, the research rune. I thought about Mari's protection rune. For Zayden and the marked ones. He's keeping it. It's still there in his bedroom. I think it can do more. I think there's more to that rune than just a sentimental value. It was there, obviously, to stimulate the conversation, but there could still be more to this rune. The other one that it made me think of was Liam's wooden carvings. I definitely think there's runes in there. And I just hope that she can master an activation rune at some point, because I think there's something there. I also thought about Brennan's rune and like how we might learn more about that. But I had exactly the same thought. I just didn't come back to the research one. I really like that idea, because you're right. We were expecting research on the first six, because we know that we've got evidence of that, because Lilith said your father found that Warwick wanted to protect the information. Lyra didn't, his Lyra's journal. And also we know that he was researching Feathertales. So yeah, where's the rest of it?
Yeah, Colonel Aitor was wondering about it. He wants that research. And that wasn't in the pages that we saw.
Yeah. Maybe he already found it.
But the other thing that caught my attention about these lines, they're obviously Violet's like, nah, I'm not going to study about the runes. I have more important things to do. And she will remember as well the cat, Catriona. She was really good, and she was the one who, in the first attempt, she managed that specific rune. And again, why cat is so good with runes?
Yeah, I think cat has been practicing the knots. I think it's another annoying thing that was like Zayden was teaching her the knots and she maybe took it a bit more seriously than Violet did. So it's just like an annoying ex-girlfriend thing. I think the interesting bit for me was not just that Kat is so good at it, it's that Violet is so bad at it, because even Auric, who hasn't, air quotes, manifested yet, which he definitely has, he managed to do it. Everyone managed to do it apart from, was it Lynx or Baylor? No, Kai. Sorry, Kai the flyer set fire to his hair or something. So he didn't do it either. But the reason I think Violet is so bad at it is because Tern's power is too powerful. So she can't use that. Obviously, later Quinn teaches her how to do it. She's like, wrestle it into place and she can do it then. But in the meantime, she's using Andana's power. Andana's power isn't working for runes. It's weak. She's getting it wrong. Sometimes it's working, but it's not very good. Is it because runes are runes only really work properly with stolen magic? There may be that's maybe what they are. Like, they're a way of stealing more magic, and they're not actually a good thing. from magic's perspective. They don't appear to work effectively with magic channeled from the sky.
I mean, we know from Fourth Wing the runes are called the equalizers between riders and regular people. But for me, it's more about riders and Venom, because they're using runes to bring wyverns because they can't use dragons. And I'm convinced as well they're using these runes to maybe duplicate or do something like sickness. Because we saw Berwyn with fire, disappearing, he is as well a distance wielder, and dreams. So he's using different powers.
And Bodhi's signet doesn't work against these signets.
Yes, because he's a counter signet.
Yeah, not a counter rune.
Counter magic. It's counter sickness.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely something about Violet. It's not just that Violet is not good at it. It's something to do with the tools she's using, I think. She's not able to effectively create a rune with magic as pure as Andana's. The only time she gets good at it or any better at it is when she starts using Tern's power, and she's given that guidance from Quinn later in the book to bend it and not just try and bend it, to snap it into place and be a bit rough with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, two good questions. Why is Kat so good at it? Why is Violet so bad at it?
Yeah. So somebody is knocking the door. And Violet.
Somebody's knocking on the door. Sorry. Go again.
Yeah, probably people from the United States don't get that reference.
No, good point.
And it's Zaydan that he is completely wet because he's been flying in this storm.
Someone else is pretty wet as well. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Well, not yet. But she will.
I wasn't talking about Violet. I was talking about Violet. I just couldn't resist saying that.
Oh gosh, you spent too much time with me.
I was talking about the carpet because he's dripping all over the carpet.
Dripping all over your ass. I mean, he still had the trousers on, but not for long.
Good luck editing this. It's going to be a mess.
That's what she said. So Zaydan returns and he is not willing to spend more time without Violet. Something interesting that he says to Violet is that you are the temple that I worship. I find that interesting because he doesn't say your body is the temple that I worship. No, he says you are. And if I were thinking that he is maybe half dedicated to Loyal, or maybe he's touched by this god, I think this is a reference that Violet is the temple for him as a Loyal follower, and she is everything for him, and she's going to be the reason that he's still having a soul.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they're soulmates. He even talks about fuck, you smell good. And she's like, it's just soap. It's not just soap. Yeah. He's smelling her, and they've scented each other before. I am more and more convinced that magic cannot take his soul because it belongs to Violet. And I wonder if magic really wants to get hold of a soul, is it going to go after Violet's instead?
Mm-hmm.
Because we know that Rebecca Yarros wanted Violet to be the one that turned. Either that means she will turn later, or the story completely changed.
Yeah. I think that at some point, Violet, she will turn as well. And it's going to be a couple of Venom.
Maybe.
But if both of them are Venom and they're still loving,
yeah,
I don't know if that will change everything from inside.
Are we seeing the same thing that happened with the change with Andana? Because Violet was never going to bond with Andana. She only was But the editor wanted her to. The editor said she needs to bond with both. Same, Violet was going to turn Fennin.
Yeah.
And it ended up being Zayden that turned. Are they both going to turn?
Yeah, maybe Rebecca Jarrell says just, this is my idea, so...
Later it needed on, to happen sooner or later, eventually.
I'm gonna put it there.
Yeah,
yes.
It needed to happen. Depends how pivotal it is to the story, doesn't it? I love that Zayden turned Fennin, though. Like, it's such a good story. I still, when I read or re-listen to Iron Flame, I get to the end and I'm like, yes! When he like looks up and his red room dies, it's like the best ending to a book ever.
Yeah,
I understand that not everybody will agree with that. We're just getting more and more hints, aren't we, that love is the answer. And he's saying that we were beyond the wards and the only thing that stopped me doing it was you, like, because that would take me back to day zero and that wouldn't give me you. So, like, whether it's not the cure or whether it's the means of controlling it, and it makes me think of Lilith and Asher. We know that Lilith was totally in love with Asher. He did something bad and she said she didn't know that she could ever forgive him, but that didn't stop her from loving him. I think Violet throws something in her face about scribes. You don't think scribes are good enough, and she said, bullshit, the love of my life was a scribe. Mm-hmm. And I do genuinely think she loved him with all of her
unconditional
soul.
Yeah.
Yeah, and perhaps, again, that was maybe a reason why she was able to walk away or why she was able to maintain control after channeling.
So, yeah, they start to have like an awkward moment. They want her, but they need to stop. They want her, but it's not a good idea. But then, and in the end, Zayden is saying that, no, I'm not waiting anymore. And that is the end of the chapter.
Shall we go for the Oryx Auguries? I think we've had quite a few bits of foreshadowing and theory making in this episode.
Yes.
Oryx Auguries is the part of the show where we look back on this week's best theories and we pick our favorite one with the hope that we will be able to pull all these together and make a complete spool of absolutely ridiculous theories that won't be true by the time we get to the fourth book. What's your favorite one from this week?
For me, I think Violet is going to use this delay rune to activate the rune and her father's research.
I love that one. I've not heard it before. I think it's really cool. So, not specifically a theory, but more a position that I don't think we can trust Kaori. I think we've got some pretty good evidence in this chapter that Kaori is up to something and he's not necessarily the good professor that we've come to know. I'm fully on this crackpot bandwagon with one of our listeners, Kelly.
Yeah.
Should say thank you for pointing out some additional evidence as to why we shouldn't be trusting him.
Yeah, to be honest, some of the stuff that you say there, it just made complete sense. And again, it's a little bit all the stuff that I'm feeling about then that it could be dealing for something really bad, or maybe it's just nothing. But with Kaori as well, could be something really there that so far you can't say, no, it's impossible.
Yeah, I think there's more and more. I'm going to keep an extra close eye on Kaori from now on.
Yeah.
Sticking with the theme of precognition, let's look ahead to the epigraph for chapter 49 next week. This has got to be one of my favorite epigraphs in the whole series. And isn't it interesting where it comes in this, in between these two chapters?
Yes.
While most deities allow temple attendants to choose their timeline of service, only two require a lifetime of dedication, Dune and Loyal. For both war and love change souls irrevocably. Major Rorilly's Guide to Appeasing the Gods, second edition.
So much to say about this, but you have to wait for next episode.
So good. Shall we enter the interrogation chamber?
Okay, let's go to the interrogation chamber.
It's Zayden's birthday and it's too soon for chocolate cake. What are you buying our shadow daddy for his special day?
Oh, easy. Sunglasses.
Sunglasses?
Yeah, imagine how useful it can be for you at a Venom. You put on sunglasses, plus he has already all the black leather, had the tattoo, so it's just like the last bit to make it even cooler.
Wouldn't it be more wouldn't it be more suspicious?
Where did you get that? Why is that?
Wouldn't that be more suspicious because the often he's always around and it's like thunder and lightning and rain and he's still in his sunglasses, nothing to see here.
I'm just a cool guy.
Yeah, good That's point. It. Yeah, he would look good.
Cool guys use sunglasses.
Yeah. This is not a joke, but I am buying him some therapy lessons. It's not a joke. Like, this guy really needs some help.
Therapy lessons.
Yeah. No, a lightning rod for outside the room so that they don't have to keep replacing the furniture. I mean, it's okay at Buzz Guy has when they can just replace it for them, but he's going to have to pay for that in Ryerson House. I'm buying him a lightning rod.
Yeah. Well, at least it wasn't like like shadow puppets.
Yeah, oh, that would be good. Shadow puppet theatre. Yeah.
Okay.
A session of therapy and a lightning rod. That's why I'm buying him.
Yes. All right. Well, we have for next week.
Okay, we are on the rune rotation. We have arrived in Erasure. If you could make a rune for anything in your life, what would it be?
In your life?
Yeah, so...
And the Mother's Day now, or...
Yeah, in modern day.
Okay.
And that's all for this week, so thank you for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at FaithfullyFantasyPod. We're most active on Instagram, so come and join the conversation. We love to hear your theories. So if you've got a good theory, send it our way. You can comment on any old reel. We will pick it up or send us a DM or join our Discord. One thing that we have been doing recently is linking up some of our listeners. If there is a book, a fantasy book that you have read and you are just busting at the seams to talk about it, but nobody in your real life has read it yet, just send us a message. We will put a call out. We've been setting up some groups on Instagram for specific chats about different books.
And with this, we have just one more thing to say. Thank you for listening to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Onyx Storm.
We'll see you next week with more theories, more deep dives, and of course, with more Faithfully Fantasy.
Bye.